This is the Techno Buffet Podcast, episode number 668, recorded Thursday, March 7th, 2024, in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1.
Dum-dum-dum. Yay, I can do it again.
Well, you know what the really ironic part is?
No.
Found the kazoo at the bottom of the suitcase. I did pack a kazoo. Also, there was an unfortunate incident with a banana and Irish security. But clearly I have too many crevices in my bag. In which things can fall and regrettably be misplaced. Although I do want to thank the security screeners at the airport for finding the banana that had fallen into the crevices of my bag. I blame my coworker. So I was, again, as you know, working in Bulgaria at another site my company has, and somebody else came along from a different office, and they were staying at a different hotel, which had a free breakfast. So they brought me a banana, and I put it in my bag to have later, and apparently I forgot about it. But apparently the Bulgarian security screeners did not see it. But it was found later at a subsequent security screening. So I brought fruit between countries, which I think is a customs violation.
Wow. You're just trying to upset the ecological balance of the world.
No, it never left my bag until I gave it to the security screeners and told them to put it into a secure garbage.
Especially yep, since as it hits the landfill, it's going to spread and take over the world.
I'm sure that my banana is going to spread and take over the world. So if you hear of an ecological banana in encourage disaster in Europe, it's all my fault.
But careful what you wish for, man.
I'm not wishing for that. I'm wishing for that not happening. But anyway, so I am home. I arrived home yesterday afternoon and was a bit tired, so I asked to postpone this recording until Thursday. I thought you would want me slightly better than I was yesterday.
I always want you better.
Yeah, I'm referring to in order to have a coherent conversation.
Okay.
So I was able to unpack all of the boxes that arrived in my absence.
You had many boxes arrive?
Well, while I was sitting in the hotel room there, I discovered that Amazon had the ESP S3. What is it? I always get the model numbers of these things wrong. I have the box here. The ESP32S3 Box 3B. Not to be confused with the ESP32S3 Box 3 without the B.
What is that? That sounds like, is that some variation of the an M5 stack or something?
Okay, do you remember the Year of the Voice videos that kept coming out from Home Assistant?
Yeah, is it the voice thing with the button?
It's like the voice thing with the little screen.
Oh, with the screen.
Yeah. So it was out of stock. And by the way, right after I bought it, it was out of stock again. So I apparently got in just under the wire there randomly because I happened to be looking at.
So here is clearly something that needs to be made more of.
They're working on it, but there's apparently a popularity. So when I was up at the wrong time of day, I flash one of these things with the ESP home firmware so I could say the secret wake word that's not so secret and talk to it.
And?
Well, it has the problem that my previous tests were, which is that it doesn't quite understand me. It does if I'm very narrow, but if you read the Home Assistant notations, you could put in some word aliases and custom sentences that might help it.
Right.
For example, I wanted to show it to somebody. who happened to be here. So the family handyman was here, and I thought he would get a kick out of it. There was a handyman emergency. These things happen. But anyway, so I told it to do something, and because I used the wrong word for it, it didn't recognize it. I said switch on the light as opposed to turn on the light, and it doesn't know how to, what that switch on the light is a synonym for turn on the light.
Seems like an easy enough problem to solve.
Yeah, well, more experimentation. But, you know, it's sort of this question that I wonder about the local voice assistant stuff that's being done by the ASP Home and Home Assistant, which is, you know, how does it fit into my setup? Now, did I get one to sort of play with it? Yeah. Would I like it to have some different features? For example, it has a little screen, and the only thing that shows up on the little screen is like the little like the sort of logo picture that lights up whenever it recognizes you. But I'd like it if when it wasn't listening for me, or if it didn't have anything, maybe it showed some useful like home-related data, like maybe, you know, temperature and weather or what have you.
Sure.
That should be easily doable. But I'm getting to the point where I have the opinion that, you know, the Home and the Echo devices have shifted so much that they don't, well, they never quite fit my needs to begin with, but they don't really fit my use cases. So maybe this little device, which has a little stand, it's very cute. Maybe it is the future of me having, you know, a little assistant device in every room.
Cool.
Don't know yet.
How many of them did you get?
Two.
And two took it out of stock?
No, what I'm saying is, like, shortly thereafter, it was out of stock. I don't think I was the only one ordering it, because I don't think I was the only one who noticed it was back in stock. So they can't really keep these things on the shelf for very long. So I looked at Mouser Electronics, which I've bought stuff from before.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see what it said about stocking for the ESP32S3 Box 3. So they're saying that they expect 127 to be delivered somewhere around the 25th of March. And that the factory lead time is about 12 weeks. So if they're getting 127, then how and people find out about it, how long do you think before it gets sold out?
Interesting.
Just saying. And it's not necessarily an inexpensive device compared to the Atom, but I figured two was reasonable for experimentation. But it's cute, at least.
Yeah.
Well, no, it has an expansion connector. It has, like, a, you know, the 2.4-inch LCD screen with the capacitive touch, which, as far as I know, does absolutely nothing right now, at least with the stock configuration that you can download that instantly makes it work. It has some ports that you could put some, peripherals into. I'm referring to, like, pinout report. So, like,
right.
Yeah. So that's it has a mute button. It has a mute LED. It has a power LED. It has, of course, the microphones. It has a boot mode button, which I don't know what that would do in this context. And of course it has the USB input for the power. And if you wanted to flash it. So again, cute little device, but we'll see. But at the very least, it is useful if I want to turn on a light, as long as I say the exact right thing. And to be fair, that's pretty much what happens with any of the voice assistants if it doesn't know what you're talking about.
Sure.
So other than that, it was mostly while I was traveling, there were some things I discovered about my travel setup I wanted to upgrade. So I did send some parts here to experiment for my next trip, of which I'm not sure when that will be. For example, my travel keyboard was too clicky.
Really?
I'm talking about noise-wise.
Uh-huh.
So I figure when I am traveling, I shouldn't have a keyboard that is too loud.
Interesting.
And this one was, I figured I could get something else, so I found a sale on a 65% keyboard and sent that to the house. That is less clicky, and I tried it. It makes as much noise as my regular keyboard. Well, again, that's weird. I didn't say my regular keyboard was. My regular keyboard is perfectly fine. It's brown switches.
Right.
So this is also brown switches. Now, supposedly the other one was also, but it's just really loud brown switches. So this one is about a reasonable volume.
Maybe it's the
cheapness of the keyboard.
Maybe it's the container that they're in. You know, sometimes the box makes a difference.
This is supposedly insulated. I did my research. I found something that was reasonably priced, but didn't seem to have some of the cheaper problems. So I have that. I tried to get a different stand because I found that the angle I was using my computer at while sitting at the folding table on the lawn chair that they loaned me, which is a whole other conversation, was not necessarily good for my neck. I was leaning down too much, so I was trying to figure out what's the smallest thing you can keep in your bag that will bring your screen up to a reasonable height so you're not leaning in a downward direction. So I decided to try something. So at some point I'll decide if I liked it, but I figured that's something I can wait for until I have taken care of some other I was away for 2 weeks sort of things.
Right.
Like, you know, piles of stuff that sort of accumulated. Like this letter that came in the mail.
What?
If we do not hear from you, they may be required to deny your claim. It's always nice when they send the letter like the day after you leave and then you're away for 2 weeks. And then it's, please contact us or we may deny your claim. So I probably should get on that. Again, things pile up when you go away. But I also, while I was sitting in the hotel room, was working on redesigning the Home Assistant run alarm system in my apartment. By the way, it seems to have worked while I was away.
Good.
So when I came home, everything deactivated the way that it should, except for the light in my bedroom, which did not. I think I fixed that. So what I did was I switched from my own coding for the alarm to a something from the community store called Alarmo, which is fairly popular, which just adds...
Alarmo?
Alarmo. It's called Alarmo. So somebody had recommended this to me, but I had decided to go it alone. But this adds a lot of simple functionality that I didn't have to custom code as a bunch of automations. So it adds the automatic linkage of sensors to the different alarm modes.
Right.
So instead of you essentially doing that yourself, it essentially allows you to manage the creation of disarming codes and allows you to essentially run inside its little interface actions when the state of the alarm changes. So instead of you having to do that all in automations, it provides a better interface for it. So I'm always looking for ways to more easily manage what I have. So this was something I decided to play with. And now that I'm home, at some point when I feel a little more recovered, I have to simulate a burglar breaking into the house so that I can see if it worked the way that I thought it would.
And are you going to wear a ski mask to do that?
No, I'm going to arm the alarm, and I'm going to open some doors and trigger some motion sensors.
Oh, okay.
I didn't say it was like a crazy plan. I just said I want to see if once I trigger it, if the triggering process works the way it's supposed to.
I get it.
So that's basically what I've been up to since I got back. Again, getting things back in order. And then looking longingly at another project I said I wanted to work on, the 3D printer, which is sitting over there waiting for me to play with it and install the replacement parts that are sitting there.
Ooh.
Well, I have one that's been sitting there for like 2 months waiting for me to get to reworking the printer. And I promised my father that I would make him those bidet knobs if I ever got the printer working again.
Right.
So what I have is the direct drive sprite extruder, which I mentioned, and the replacement was a bimetallic heat brake. Again, to try to prevent clogging and other things that were happening before. And then I really need to figure out how to calibrate the thing better. But I hear there's all this, since the last time I was playing with it, there's all this new professional level firmware that might make it easier to change the settings to recalibrate some of the things that have been
acting. I don't know about that.
Well, that's, again, the potential problem with the Ender series. It really is for tinkerers, and the question is, how much tinkering do I want to do? I've been asking that for a while. No, it's sort of the, I like tinkering. It's just, if you spend more time tinkering with the thing than actually using it, it sort of defeats the purpose of having a 3D printer. It shouldn't be a money sink where I put in like new parts, but I don't actually get 3D prints out of it.
That would be not ideal.
And I never even got to sort of the hobby of designing my own thing because I couldn't reliably print stuff.
Right, which is not good.
Yeah, well, I'm going to try to make it work. And if I get it working, there were a few other parts I considered adding to it, which I think I mentioned to you, the PEI bed as a possibility that people keep saying helps with you getting things off of it afterwards.
Sure.
And I was noticing that Creality, who makes the Ender series, has a different holder for your spool that might be a little more effective. But again, let something print before I put any more into it than I already have sitting there. So we'll see. There's a new version of Home Assistant.
Ooh.
2024.3. Have you installed this yet, Jerry?
I have.
I have not because, again, this happened yesterday, and yesterday was not a good day for me to install stuff. I already got really worried when I was playing with my server and, you know, remotely from Bulgaria, because I don't like to tweak servers when I've come to the realization that if it crashes, I'm on the other side of the world.
Right.
Although I did come up with a solution for that that's worked reasonably well. I have an ESP. I have a ESP Home smart switch hooked up to the power for the server, and I could actually essentially just toggle the power if everything else fails. It's sort of a last resort, but at least it's a resort. But apparently, the experimental version of the new section dashboard, which is the Grace project. Is available, so you can sort of play with that. Some new intents for assist. The ability to use script inputs and fields from the dashboard. New energy graph for individual devices. So lots of interesting things. If you didn't watch the video about the experimental sections view, which is, again, the Grace project, then go watch that. I think it's sort of hard to describe other than the fact that it's, again, much more flexible in terms of how it displays. So, looks nice.
Does. Yeah.
But it is still experimental. But again, even with there, you can move things around and drag and drop more effectively, even with the non-Grace style sectional. You can run a script from your dashboard with user input. Never a bad thing. You can create an announce script for your dashboard, pre-configured to a specific media player and text script. So this is an example that they've configured for a blueprint that uses this new functionality. And they've also created a blueprint for a add to to-do list script, where you can add an item to a to-do list using a script.
That's cool.
Yeah. Here are some new sentences for... assist. You can ask it to adjust the position of a valve, and you can tell it to control the position of your cover devices. They're also working on extending the use case coverage to set the position of multiple devices or complete areas. So this is what I was talking about earlier, where I need to better customize sentences, because there are ones I'd like. I would like, you know, to be able to ask the home assistant assist process what the weather is and actually get an answer. I think that's a very common use case for me.
Okay.
Or what the temperature is in a room.
I would agree.
Yeah. Well, let's try it. Hey, Nabu. What is the temperature in the living room? It said it was not aware of any climate in the living room area.
Well, at least it kind of understood what you were asking.
Yeah. So it's looking for climate because it's looking for the temperature at a thermostat. And remember, I don't have a thermostat in the living room. Actually, you might not remember that. I've mentioned that I only have one thermostat in the entire apartment. So I wouldn't have assigned it to the area of the living room. Because it actually covers the whole place.
Right.
But although that is sort of a bit of feedback, if you have something that covers everything, you don't have a way of doing that at Home Assistant with their areas. So you can't
say, you do not.
Well, maybe that's the feedback for the next, why can't I do this thing that they do? Moving along, apparently they've also added in media players, so it can now pause, resume, skip, and set the volume of media players.
That's cool. That's important. That's valuable.
I agree with you. And as I said, I think a lot of this is they're going to add some build and stuff, and people are going to customize. So I have to get and start playing with the customization. Because it's definitely there if you look. If you go into the settings for the voice assistant, there are options to better control things and essentially add aliases so you can get the wording right, add custom sentences, etc. So certainly I should be able to solve what it is I want to solve if I work on it and read more of the instructions. But we'll see. You can now disable the remote activation of the Home Assistant remote UI. So this is for people who use Home Assistant Cloud. You can now essentially disable that so that you cannot turn it on remotely. So it can only be enabled directly by you, not through the Nabu Casa interface.
Cool.
Here's another one. If you're using a template to send notifications during an automation, there is now a new template method, state translated, that will translate states directly from the template. So that'll translate it again into the default language of your Home Assistant instance. So instead of it giving the, you know, the system definition of that state, it'll translate it into the human acceptable version in the language that you've set. Very helpful. I'm saying it's helpful. I'm not saying, well, there's not much more to say about this. This is a good idea. There are other things I'd like to do with it. We're back to that sort of customizing thing. Is maybe I want to set my own strings for this, not a different language, but different phrases. Maybe I don't want my door to be open. I want my door to be of state ajar.
You would.
No, I'm just using an example. Apparently, Home Assistant 2024.03 is apparently twice as fast on the boot. So more performance improvements.
That's kind of cool, gotta say.
Yep. The climate entity now has a toggle service, so you can now toggle your climate. If you use a Matter light, they now support transitions. And apparently, since people liked downloading CSVs of their history, now you can download your energy dashboard data to a CSV file.
Ooh.
Thought that was a nice one. Apparently, they've added some new integrations, including something to control your AppleLayer thermostats and your Husqvarna.
I don't know what those are.
Auto mower integration. Well, I'm assuming.
That's actually kind of cool.
Well, I'm assuming the fact that the name of the company is Husqvarna, that would suggest to me that that is probably a European company. That sounds like what's vaguely Scandinavian.
Sure.
Maybe it's the way I'm pronouncing it. Oh, no. Swedish. So I did get correctly, but apparently they do have a U.S. division where you can buy a chainsaw or a lawnmower. But
I don't know if I trust an automated chainsaw.
Yeah, but the
that just sounds not cool.
Husqvarna Group, which is Husqvarna, was headquartered in Stockholm and was founded in 1689 in Husqvarna, Sweden. So apparently, it is one of the oldest continuously running companies in the world, which was originally founded as a firearms manufacturer in 1689. So you learn something new every day. So despite the fact I'd never heard of them, apparently they are one of the oldest companies in existence. So, don't you feel educated now?
I do.
You can control your MicroBees devices. Never heard of them either. The Weatherflow Cloud, which is an alternative to local weather flow integration from a Tempest weather station. And Webmin, you can monitor your Webmin managed server. And there are a bunch of virtual integrations, again, different versions of products where they're now configured for different things, such as Opower, which is used by a variety of energy companies where they keep adding in integrations for specific power companies.
And I'm praying and hoping that eventually they integrate with something that I use. But
well, again, I was surprised when they integrated with Con Ed. Not that I didn't think Con Ed was a big target, but I hadn't been expecting it. And now it's sort of I still haven't figured out quite what to do with the energy usage. I like looking at it sort of as a behavioral thing to sort of say, okay, I've noticed that energy usage spikes at these times of day. Yeah. For example, on March 6th, which is, remember, I'm not the only person in the building. I've mentioned that a few times that there are other apartments. Not a large building, but still. For some reason, power peaked at 6 o'clock last night. So between 6 and 7, the energy usage was at its highest.
And interesting.
But then it progressively went down. So between 6 and 7, it went to 4.68 kilowatt hours. Then it went down to 3.31, and then by 8 o'clock it was at 1.68. So what happened at 6, between 6 and 7, that essentially more than doubled the power that was used 2 hours later, or in the previous hour? What happened during that 1 hour, I wonder? And the question is, that's very interesting, but we're still back to how do I use that information other than being interested by it? Because, you know, if you look, I also have the gas consumption. The building uses gas heat and for hydronic heating and gas hot water heating, but nothing else. So there's no gas cooking in this building. That's all electric. So between 6 and 7, was I using a high-yield electrical device, and how would I find out? Am I going to have to start putting, like, individual smart plugs on everything so I can know what's using the most electricity?
Clearly.
No, I'm saying what's... Now, I wasn't even in town, let's say, on March 3rd. Now, March 3rd, at between 6 and 7, so this would have been Sunday at night, it says that only 0.66 kilowatt hours was used in the building. Wonder what happened. So apparently the energy usage has completely increased since my arrival. Which makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, but I didn't think it would increase that much. No, I'm saying for that 1 hour. The rest of it is pretty, you know, it increased slightly, but not significantly. But again, we're back to what can I do with that information? And I'm wondering, I may start reading of what people are saying online they're using those insights to do. Because, as I said, I find them insightful, but I'm not deriving a benefit from them yet. Anyway, so that's all for the update to Home Assistant. A few other things happened. The Linux market share has passed 4% for the first time. And the dominance
of crazy.
And the dominance of Mac OS has declined.
Yay!
Yeah. So it's also, it's 4.03% of global market share, and it goes up. if you include Chrome OS, which I would say I wouldn't, only because it's not really, I'd say, advertised as a Linux operating system. So that would bring it to 6.34%. But it's still, even if you exclude Chrome OS, it is still a significant jump from what it was a year earlier. Windows dominance has apparently increased, and Mac OS has seen its desktop market share drop from 21 to 15. Again, this is from June of last year to February of this year. But again, nice to see it grow.
Yep. Indubitably.
So The Verge had an interesting article about how caregivers are using smart tech to help aging parents. I just thought that was interesting.
And how are they doing that?
Essentially, one would be giving them Echo shows. And so apparently they can speak and ask things without having to deal with some other things.
All right, that's cool.
So there are a lot of interesting stories if you read this. Also, people putting in smart cameras to monitor their elderly loved ones.
That seems intelligent.
Well, I had a coworker.
As long as I know about it.
Yeah, I had a coworker who did this. So I had a... Well, I still have the coworker, but... the parents in question have since passed away. So this was 2 years ago, where they had a parent who was ill and who lived in a different city. So... they weren't there taking care of them. They had other relatives who were closer who were checking in on them. But what they did was they were watching, while they were working, they were watching the camera feed from an iPad that they kept on their desk.
Yeah.
So that's what this sort of made me think of, which is, you know, you can watch them and you can call somebody if there's a problem, which gives the local relatives a bit of a break if you're taking turns, which in this case they were. There are things like trackers, pill dispensers, and of course, you could always talk to your smart assistant.
Like you do.
Doesn't work.
Well, that...
No, I meant conversationally talk. For example, you could have you ever asked your Google Home or Amazon Echo device if it, let's say, would be your friend?
No.
I just wanted to see what it would say.
And what did it say?
You're the greatest. Of course, I'll be your friend.
That's actually kind of cool.
Every so often, I just throw random questions at one of those things just to see if somebody programmed an interesting answer.
Nice.
Yeah, at one point it was, I asked it to make me a sandwich.
And it said, poof, you're a sandwich?
Yeah.
Nice.
No, again, just for the amusement of it, I assume. But for the one that I have on my desk, I'd like to just answer the questions I wanted to answer. But if the article can be found in the show notes, as always, if you're interested in reading some other things that people are using smart home technology to help in regards to their parents. If you have a Google Workspace account, apparently you can now migrate email data from one Workspace account to another that's currently in an open beta.
Ooh.
Migration is good. If you use 1Password, it has now extended its passkey support to Android, which, by the way, Bitwarden has not yet done.
Nope.
But there is a provider for it, so again, we'll see what happens. There is a case study from the Android Developers Blog, which is Embracing Android 14, Meta's Early Adoption Empowered Enhanced User Experience. So I'm not going to talk too much about this other than saying I just find it interesting that there's this whole story about how Meta essentially made the Facebook app work better. It's sort of an interesting read just for the how they approached it part of it.
Cool.
If you're a user of WhatsApp, which I was using extensively while I was abroad.
Sure.
Well, I had a reason. Everybody kept telling me, send me something on WhatsApp so you don't have to pay for local calls, which I didn't want to do. So, They are required to do this, but they are gearing up to allow users to chat with people on other apps. So they will be requiring those apps, I heard, to use the Signal protocol.
Yes.
And they will require them to pre-register. So you can't just automatically integrate. But it is progress, even if it is progress forced by government order. Just because I don't like that the government ordered, that does not mean that I don't think it is progress. Anyway, well, you know, we both agree on that sort of point there.
Yes.
The sometimes the government's order does create something that we like, but the government shouldn't have to order companies to do something that helps consumers. Companies should occasionally do that. Pixel had a feature drop, which has not yet arrived for me because they're holding it back, apparently, for people in the United States. So this includes, again, improvements to the call screening functionality. So it can help get a call started when the caller is silent.
Wow.
So when the caller is unresponsive, you will see a hello chip. So chip is like that little pop-up thing. And you can tap a button and it will prompt the caller to speak so you can understand why they are trying to reach you.
That's cool.
Because that happens a lot where nobody says anything when I'm screening calls. So now I can say, hello.
Apparently, hello.
Yeah. Apparently they've expanded circle to search, which is where you circle to search.
What the heck is that?
You draw a circle on the screen and it searches whatever's in the circle. As in, you want to search.
This is interesting.
You want to search specific information that's in some other app. So you can sort of do this. Let me see if they have a good explanation for this. Here we are. It is with a simple gesture without switching apps. So what you would do essentially is circle, highlight, scribble, or tap. So essentially what they want to do is allow you to identify something within another app for that would be sent to search in order to figure out what it is. So that has been expanded from the Pixel 8, which it was exclusive on, to the Pixel 7. Also, if you are a user of the first generation Pixel Watch, which I am not, apparently you can now get public transit directions on your wrist. It can help you with breathing exercises and apparently better workout tracking. Also, you can more easily pair your device. But as I discovered on the way back to my home, that isn't always a good thing because somebody on the plane apparently had a pair of headphones that my phone kept offering to pair with.
Right.
It was driving me crazy. It was, would you like to pair with this strange pair of headphones that's somewhere around you? No, I would not. No, I would not. Over and over again. Anyway. If you use Android Auto, apparently it will be flagging parked apps on the home screen. So this is one of those things I think we've talked about where Google has finally realized that people want to use the screen in the car, but for things that shouldn't be used while driving. So they have the ability to have apps that will work when the car is parked. So that would allow you to do more things as long as you aren't doing them while driving.
Nice. I think, I hope.
Well, as I think, again, I think that's sort of the, you want to watch, let's say, YouTube while your car is parked. Something that you don't want to do while you're driving, which regrettably several of the taxi drivers I was in last week were doing.
Really?
Yeah. Including the one who drove me to the airport at 3 in the morning. Fortunately, there weren't that many people around that he could have hit, but still.
Still funny.
I would have politely asked him if he could perhaps keep his eyes on the road, but he, at the very least, said that his English wasn't very good. And my ability to speak his language was non-existent. So we communicated in the universal manner. Pantomime.
Huh. Does that mean you flipped him off? What does that mean?
No, it mostly included me gesturing to and then attempting to provide a gesture of thanks for him not killing me on the way to the airport.
Uh-huh.
By the way, the airport in Sofia is surprisingly hopping at 3 in the morning. But that's... I wouldn't recommend it for that, that you show up there to find out how hopping it is. If you're a user of Firefox and you have a tablet, you can now try their new tablet interface on Android. Here's an interesting one. HP is in the rent-a-printer business. So their new proposition is that you can essentially rent your printer. So for $6.99 a month, you can get 20 pages worth of prints and whatever the current HP Envy model is. And it goes all the way up to $35.99, which will get you an OfficeJet Pro and 700 pages. But don't worry, if you go over your page allotment, it's only a dollar per 10 to 15 pages.
Per how many pages?
A dollar for... Yeah.
Man...
Yeah. Wow.
That's crazy.
Well, there's a reason why both with Inkjet and then after I switched over to Laser, I have stuck with Brother. I will endorse Brother as a company that has not tried any of these things. At least not that I know of. I'm not saying that I haven't occasionally been frustrated with my Brother printer, but most of the time it prints, and that's what I want a printer to do.
Print?
I keep a printer around. Well, I stopped doing inkjet because what would happen is I would almost never print color. And then, despite the fact that I would never print color, when any of the color things would dry out, I would end up having to replace the black one. So sort of, I don't use color enough, and I have to pay for a resource that keeps depleting despite the fact that I'm not using it. So Laser has worked out much better for me because usually I just need to print a couple of pages of documents every so often. Like when I printed a bunch of papers in case I somehow lost my internet access while I was away and needed critical information. But again, I want to talk to the person who thinks that renting a printer for 20 pages worth of prints per month is a good idea. As I said, I want to meet the person who thinks that this is something they would buy. Not because I'm insulting them, because I just honestly do not see it. If you use Bitwarden, which, as you know, I do, they will be offering a native app finally. So they're redesigning their Android and iOS app for a more native and updated experience. So this means they're moving away from a framework that essentially allows them to create one application that will be used on multiple platforms. This apparently will, again, be more native. So, we'll see. The expectation is that'll be a few months.
Okay.
So, the new one is a complete rewrite.
Complete rewrite.
As in, to a more native application instead of using a framework. There are pros and cons to that.
There are. It's harder to maintain, but...
Well, again, customized for your platform usually creates the ability to have a better experience. I understand why many developers will use a generic framework so that they don't have to produce multiple versions of their app. And that's fine if you can't, but I think Bitwarden is popular enough they can do it. I gave them money. I don't think the money I gave them is enough to support development, but I'm saying I gave them money because... I could have just run my own Bitwarden infrastructure, but I felt like I wanted somebody to develop the thing. If you have a Nest Hub, apparently Fuchsia version 16 is rolling out. So Fuchsia is the operating system that Google developed that they replaced their original Linux-based system on the Nest Hubs with.
So I'm sorry, say that again. I got distracted.
This is Fuchsia version 16 on the Nest Hub. So originally, the Nest Hubs ran a Linux-based system, but then they changed it to their in-house Fuchsia operating system. Apparently, the latest version fixes a bunch of things, like headphones were not showing up in Bluetooth devices when scanning. Media information was not showing up when paired with some phones. They've added support for air quality sensors over Matter. And a few other things for Matter-based subscriptions. So, we'll see. At least they're updating it. Although I am still waiting for a new Nest Hub device.
Really?
I'm worried that they're phasing out the category in favor of that whole Pixel tablet thing. As I said, the Nest Hub is the best digital photo frame I ever had. None of the other ones compare. The Google Pixel now makes up 3% of phones shipped in North America. I've silenced you, Jerry.
I actually think that's kind of cool.
I think so, too, but I'm just saying you usually respond to these things. I was worried that you were just so shocked.
How is this possible? I mean, okay, it's a good phone. I miss using a Pixel, but
the Pixel's
3% is a big number.
But it's Google. Always been a niche brand. That's big for Google, but again, it's far beyond a lot of companies that are not quite as, revered on the cachet side of things. Samsung has 23, I think. But either way, this shows that the Pixel is getting its little foothold.
I like it. I like it a lot.
How about this one? Google Contacts widgets will now show the person's last sent message. So essentially, if you have a contact widget from somebody, it will show the last thing that they sent to you. And continuing me finding articles about people talking about physical media, The Verge did one, The Case for 4K Blu-ray in a World of Streaming. And again, you know how I feel about that.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
Well, that's the thing. Streaming didn't necessarily work as successfully as I would have liked in the hotel, and had I brought along physical media on a physical drive from my collection, I could have done more than just catch up on my YouTube. Other things were hiccuping too much. Although when I got to the second hotel, I didn't have that problem. I was actually able to watch pre-recorded television from my DVR in the more conventional hotel as opposed to the apartment style one.
Right.
Yeah. But I gathered from the hotel owner that everybody in the hotel was sharing the same internet connection. So while it wasn't necessarily a slow internet connection, there's only so many ways you can divide it before it becomes slower. So at certain times of day, it was fine. But either way, the case is that if you care about quality and you like to not worry that the thing that you like to watch will no longer be available to you, then physical media is still a good bet. And I still have my operation to work on my physical media. And while I was away, I mentioned I was also testing Tidar.
Tidar?
Yeah, I did mention this. The thing that
transcodes. Yeah, it's the transcoder thing.
Yeah, so I was able to transcode some of my files from H.264 to H.265 and save myself a little space. And hopefully, if I was streaming it over the internet and via a WireGuard VPN that I have set up, hopefully that would mean it would not be quite so slow. So a lot of things have been recoded. And in some cases, I saved a little space.
Cool.
So I figured I might be able to use this to save a step in the future, because what I do generally is that I rip the file and then I convert it into the desired format. But if I did this, I would be able to place the file exactly where I wanted it to be on the server and then have the server go and convert it into a different file format from the original. At least that's how it sounds like it makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
So, again, saves me some time. Although I still have to rename the files and identify which one of the RIP files is what. Which is what always takes time. If you use Google TV, and if you remember, I still am, it is getting an updated home screen with a new look and features. So all of the apps will now have round icons instead of square ones.
Ooh.
Yes. Exciting, isn't it?
It is.
I like round. Round is fun. Anyway, not much to say about that. If you use Google Maps, they are finally making glanceable directions widely available.
Glanceable directions. Oh, we talked about this last time.
Yes, cool. We did. And I wanted to mention it because I was having a lot of trouble with this recently where I couldn't figure out where I was. And I don't want to hit this. I don't want the full navigation where it's like, you know, I just want to be able to look at the thing and say, okay, you've moved closer to your destination. I want a much less immersive navigation for when I'm walking as opposed to driving.
Right.
And this is more like that. Anyway, so that brings us to the end of this. We talked about some of the Barcelona stuff last week. I thought I'd taken that off of the show notes, but I must have left it on there. And we talked about Google Pay. So I think that's everything for this week. And hopefully, hopefully I'll be able to recover enough over the next few days to get some stuff done to talk about. I do have a family wedding coming up in the middle of the week because for some reason my family member decided that Tuesday night was a good day to get married.
Maybe it is.
Do people get married on a Tuesday? Obviously this person is. Is that common? I thought most people got married like closer to the weekend.
Well, I think, it's a date. It's a day of the year that will like stay with you forever. So if you need to do it on a weekend to get the date that you want, then you do so.
I got the impression it was the date that the banquet hall wanted.
Mm.
As in, they had the date. But anyway, that means that since I am going to be traveling, well, not incredibly far for that wedding, it means that if I have time over the weekend, I can get my replacement travel gear tested. Since I'm spending one night at a hotel.
Cool.
But other than that, I don't know if I'm going to get to the printer. Hopefully I'll get to that soon because I'd really like to actually get that working. But there's just so much to do. You know how it is. You go away for a little while and you're behind on all of your various tasks.
Yes, sir.
So on that note, until next week. By the way, as far as I know, and I'll check again, I don't think anybody had any feedback on if I give up on the 3D printer, what is the type of printer I should consider getting? So if anybody wants to comment on that in the future, always happy to hear about it. But as I said, haven't heard anything so far. Never know. Maybe nobody had an opinion, which is
always maybe fun. Nobody.
But I've heard good things. What was that brand people said was the new... Bamboo, was it? Bamboo Labs is the one that I think people are saying is now sort of the reliable mid-range.
Right. I don't know, man.
Well, again, there's still plenty of Enders out there. But, again, just seems to be a lot of work to get the thing to actually work. Which suggests a lack of innovation on the Ender people, or Creality is the company. But again, even in the months since I last was fiddling with the printer, there have been some developments that might help me. So, we'll see. So, shall we adjourn until next week?
Until next week. Bye, folks.
I will be back for my event by then.
Cool.
Hopefully. What's that plan to? Anyway, until then.
Till then. Bye, folks.
Goodbye.